Welcome to The Other Coast, a podcast dedicated to the Malifameta in Los Angeles. My name is Jeff, and with me here is another SoCal player, Colgan.
Hey, everyone.
Hey, Colgan. So today we are going to talk about Soulstones. This is going to be an episode for primarily for beginners. You know, beginners are kind of the focus of our podcast, at least nominally. I mean, sometimes, you know, we just riff on whatever, but I do think we try to have content to help out people who are, you know, at the beginning of their journey in Malifaux, because we really can't help people who are past the beginning of their journey. But all of this is just to say that this episode may not be very relevant to players who, you know, feel pretty comfortable about the basic mechanics of the game.
Yes. That is true. Wait, do we already say we're talking about Soulstones?
Yes.
I got lost in that whole spiel about how not good we are, so we can only teach beginners.
Okay, well, so I guess with that display of competence, we can turn to Soulstones. All right. So, Colgan, what are Soulstones?
So Soulstones, I guess you won't talk about the lore aspect of it, but in gameplay terms, they're basically a resource that you can use to affect a number of things during the game. And how you obtain them generally is by not spending all of the Soulstones required to build your crew. In a standard game of Malifaux, you have about 50 stones, and any stones that you do not spend, up to a maximum of 10 Soulstones during the crew building phase, you can bring with you into the game, again, for a number of effects, which we will go into a little more detail about later.
Right. But to take a step back, I guess, Jim's not here, but let's spiritually channel Jim. Lore-wise, what are Soulstones?
I only have a very basic understanding of this, but from what I remember, they're basically a resource unique to Malifaux, and which is pretty much why people on Earth bother even going to Malifaux in the first place, so they can take these soul stones, which are basically gems infused with a lot of power, and I guess you can also infuse them with people's souls, hence the name, though I'm not sure if it's exclusively used for containing souls, and you can use them to power a lot of different things. So it's basically like a very powerful energy source, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's true. Generally, so the world of Malifaux, right, like the Malifaux world, not the Earthside world, world of Malifaux is so steeped in magic that some soul stones will recharge naturally by themselves over time, but the surest way is for someone to die near them. And that's part of what kind of makes the mines that, you know, from where these soul stones are found so dangerous, because the owners of the mines have a vested interest in ensuring as many bad things as possible happen in the mine so that the soul stones are kind of at peak performance. So it's pretty interesting, like, you know, element of the game. If you play the role-playing game Through the Breach, obviously kind of the quirks of how soul stones work within the setting are maybe a bit more important. But yeah, from the gameplay standpoint, they're just single use. And they do have several other uses. Now, you did mention, which we'll get to later, you did mention that the main way is leftover stones that you didn't spend from your initial allotment of 50. Are there other ways to gain soul stones? Like, can you gain soul stones during the game or something?
Yeah, there are some models, like the Prospector from Outcast is the one I'm most familiar with. They basically can, at the beginning of the turn, just gain stunned and give you a soul stone, which is pretty nice.
Mm-hmm.
There are Ronin, also outcasts, which have an action, I forget the name, but they can basically kill themselves to either give you two soul stones or two cards. And then there's the upgrade for the Arcanist, which is like soulstone cash, and one of its abilities is if enemies die near you, you gain soul stones, which I guess now is pretty thematic.
The explorers also have an upgrade, Flush with Cash, which is kind of opposite, where when your own dudes die, you can gain a stone. You forgot Greed from the Crossroads 7. Greed can potentially get you stones. It's not necessarily super common, because the potential stone user also already needs to have a sin token on them when they try to use a stone. within Greed's aura. So, yeah, potentially it can happen, but it's not the most common. There's also, you know, a couple of different ways. Some keywords are more likely to produce stones during the course of the game than others, right? So, you know, some keywords can get soul stones off markers. Some might steal soul stones, like Desper steals and Parker can steal. So there are ways to gain soul stones during gameplay, but they tend to be pretty niche and not something that everyone is going to have access to. So for the most part, you should pretty much consider your primary method of obtaining soul stones is by not spending all of your stones during crew selection. So with that sort of overview of how you get soul stones, what do you use them for? What do they do?
Yeah, there's a ton of uses. So I guess the first one that usually come up, or the first decision point that'll come up in the game, is using them to redraw cards into your control hand. So during the start phase, you can burn a soul stone to draw two more cards and then discard back to your control hand size, whatever that may be.
Mm-hmm.
I generally don't use this during the first turn, but in the turns after that, especially when you expect there to be heavy fighting, it can be a really good way to, you know, burn some bad cards out of your deck and get some good cards into your hand.
So when you said you don't generally do it on the first turn, why is that?
I generally don't do it on the first turn because I don't really expect there to be any fighting or a lot of opposed duels.
Mm-hmm.
And generally, like, you know, I'll usually have enough cards for my simple duels, and I would rather save those stones for later in the game where I can use them to, I guess, for like important offensive flips or keeping my guys alive, or again, like improving my hand quality in like turns 2 and 3, where there tends to be a lot more fighting for objectives.
Okay. So it's to elaborate a little more on this first turn. So it sounds like, you know, when you say you're not doing it the first turn, it's because you're sort of expecting reduced interaction between the two crews relative to what you might see in a subsequent turn. So then I would assume, and, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, that if circumstances of the game kind of validate that expectation, you might be more likely to stone, right? So if the deployments are maybe more aggressive, right? So in flank deployment or wedge, where you're maybe have more potential for a turn one impact, or if you're playing kind of an alpha strike crew or playing against an alpha strike crew, are those things that might increase the likelihood that you'll stone on turn one?
Yeah, for sure. And yeah, even in like later turns, maybe in 2 and 3, where I expect there to be heavy fighting, if I'm against like a scheme heavy crew, or if they spread out so much that there really isn't like any kind of center of fighting and it's just skirmish fights, I might again just save those stones, maybe just to like prevent some damage, or maybe waiting for a later turn when I need to ensure a kill or like increase my chances of something happening.
Got it. And then, so I know, you know, according to our outline, we actually have another section that explains use, but for at least this use of the soul stones, you know, to draw cards, it's there's not really a ton to it, so I'm just going to go ahead and kind of tie a bow on this section to ask you, you know, how do you decide whether or not you need to stone for cards?
Yeah, I mean, a definitely big part of it is just going to be the overall card quality in my hand. You know, like if I think there's going to be a lot of fighting and like my highest card is like a 7, then it starts becoming a lot better because, you know, I know that there's higher cards in my deck. And if I'm playing with those, I'd much rather have control of when they come out.
Mm-hmm.
Rather, you know, so I have them in my hand so I can cheat them when I need them. And it's also going to depend a lot on my crew, right?
Sure.
What simple duels I have, I spec I need to be summoning things. Like, even if I have, like, overall, like, a generally good spread of cards in my hand, I might still decide that I want to try and dig for a higher card if I'm playing a summoner and I really need to get, like, a high-cost summon out that turn.
Right. So we've talked in other episodes about how when you draw your control hand, that's a good time to kind of evaluate your goals for the turn and maybe look at actions that you expect to want to do and what resources you have available to ensure that they go off. But, and so I understand, you know, this is the other coast. It depends. But do you have, you know, if a gun was to your head and you had to give someone kind of a guideline to you, what is like a minimally acceptable hand? Or sorry, let me put it another way. Like what, is it like, oh, if I don't have a severe, I'm going to stone for cards? Like, can you give us any kind of just sort of like vague signpost?
Oh, okay. I guess in general, if I have like 2 to 3 cards under five, so like 1s, 2s, 3s, and 4s.
Because
generally they're like the lowest card you need for a simple duel to pass is usually at least a five. So I generally regard anything as like four and lower to just be pure trash in my hand. Like there's absolutely no use for it. I mean, again, there's some side cases, like if you have like rapid fire or something where you can discard a card to get another attack.
Right, or like spend for execute or...
Right.
Yeah, there are actions to spend for. And there are like there are some actions that a four will succeed at, but yeah, they're not very common.
Yeah, so if I have like definitely like four or lesses on my hand, I'm pretty much always going to stone just because there's usually no use for those cards. And just getting it out so I don't have to see them for the entire turn is great. Like, you know, I'm not going to have a useless card in my hand. I can pull something out of my deck that hopefully, you know, most likely they're not going to be much higher than that. And if not, then, well, at least I won't flip that much worse for the rest of the turn.
Right. I think that's actually an underappreciated aspect of stoning for cards that might take a couple of games for a player to really catch on about. And it, you know, if you stone for cards and say the cards that you drew are also bad and you ultimately have to discard them, those are cards you're not going to flip. And it, you know, if you discarded low cards from your hand, you know, again, those are cards that you're not going to flip unless you go through your whole deck, and that's not super common. So even if it doesn't improve your hand or doesn't improve your hand very much, you're still getting value from getting rid of low cards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
Now, what interested me in the way you defined kind of your standard is you talked about it in the context of having low cards. You're like, if I had three fours or less, to me, that's like, I got a stone. So you're not really, you know, you're not looking at a hand of a bunch of moderates and being like, oh, I need severes.
I'm not as concerned with that. You know, I mean, like, it's nice to get Saphirs, but I feel like the flexibility in the stones, I guess I'm not sure of the math exactly, but I feel like it's not necessarily great odds to stone just to try and cheat in, like, slightly higher cards into your hand.
Mm-hmm.
Would
you stone if you have, if you draw, like, a range of kind of weakish moderates, right? Like, all 6s through 9s. Like, is that a stoning situation for you, or are you, I understand it depends, but just generally speaking, do you think you're going to hold on to the stone, or do you think you're going to fish for something better?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, as always, it's going to depend a lot. If I have a good cache of stones, that might be something I just fish for.
Mm-hmm.
Or again, you know, if I'm playing a summoner, I really want like the high cost summon. I guess a lot of it is going to kind of play with what I think my odds are and how necessary I think it is. I think in most cases, I'll probably be okay with that hand.
Mm-hmm.
And there would need to be like pretty heavy fighting or something very specific I need to do for me to want to burn that stone to try and get something a little bit higher.
Right. For myself, I tend to bring a little bit fewer stones than probably desirable just because I want more models or I want upgrades. And so I find myself not able to stone in those situations somewhat frequently, but I feel like if I have, you know, stones to spend, that seems like a circumstance where I would spend, because the thing about a hand of all weak moderates like that is it might be great for simple duels, but you have a very reduced ability to force things through in opposed duels with your opponent. And I generally find that I frequently want to succeed at duels with my opponents. But aside from that, there's quite often kind of a central thing I'm trying to do in the turn. And if my best card is a 9, it's not looking, you know, I can't really rest on that happening.
Yeah, I can see that.
So that's card draw. What else can you use them for? And I guess you can sort of summarize the remaining and we'll go over them in more depth. In the next section.
All right. Thank you for your permission, Jeff. You can use them offensively. So when you can use it for a plus flip on a duel, I guess you can also do that defensively. But when you're attacking someone, you can stone to get a plus flip, or you can add a suit to the duel.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this can be used offensively or defensively in a duel.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I guess, strictly for defense, if you're defending against an attack, you can use a stone to give the attacker a negative on the damage flip,
mm-hmm.
or you can use it for damage prevention, and you'll prevent 1, 2, or 3 damage depending on whether it's a weak, moderate, or severe flip when you're doing that test.
So you can also spend stones for plus flips or suits in simple duels as well.
Yes.
It's not necessarily just within the context of opposed duels, but yeah, so you can basically for most duels, you can do that.
Yeah, for any duel, you can get a plus flip or add a suit.
Right. And then there's kind of a miscellaneous category of things where, you know, spending a stone might come up. You know, you might have to spend a stone for an action cost or to prevent something like execute or whatever, but those are like quite specific. They may be common because your enemy might have an execute crew or something, or you might have brought models with actions that require you to spend a soul stone, like the Bayou Smuggler has an action like that. But yeah, they tend to be specific. All right, so this next section we have listed on our outline is when should you be using them. But the very first section we have is how many should you bring, which is you know, not exactly an ode to our administrative skills, or at least specificity in our administration, but it is a good question. How many should you bring? So what do you think, Colgan?
I feel like generally for me, I want to bring at least 5 stones into any game.
Mm-hmm.
And then that number will fluctuate quite a bit. If I'm playing a crew that I know will needs like a lot of suits or has a lot of simple duels that I want suits to be used, it'll go higher, like 7 or 9 stones even.
Mm-hmm.
So things like summoners, or especially, well, I guess the main example is summoners, since you want to make sure that you can reliably summon a model every turn and hit that suit.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll go lower than that if I have models like the Prospector that I know can generate stones reliably, since, you know, generally you're not looking at burning your entire cash in like the first turn of the game.
Sure. I expect I know the answer to this, especially since we talked about it in one of our first episodes about the various resources that are in the game. But would you ever bring no stones with the theory that you're going to rely on models that generate stone?
I wouldn't. I think it can be done and it might be all right, but I always like having that like 1 or 2 stone buffer just in case something unexpected happens, as it always does.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And generally I feel like it's worth it to have, yeah, just like 1 or 2 stones instead of grabbing that extra upgrade or something.
Gotcha. So, you know, I realize a lot of this depends on specifics and, like, you know, what your crew is trying to do and what you need them for. But why 5? Why is this kind of a benchmark number? Is it just like the middle of the range? So it seems close to what's going to happen frequently anyways. Like, you can only bring 10. Eh, 5 seems okay. Or, you know, is 5 like the amount that you generally tend to spend? Like, why this number 5 as kind of a starting point?
I think it is kind of generally how much I tend to spend. It gives me a little bit of flexibility because I always personally always like keeping around some stones for preventing damage against like my master or my henchmen, or, you know, like, especially since I tend to play a bit more aggressively.
Mm-hmm.
So being able to just, you know, basically negate an entire attack in some cases is really nice. And it also gives you that flexibility, I guess, to, you know, kind of get better cards into your control hand at the beginning of a turn if you don't quite like it. And then I feel like it's generally enough that I'll run out by like turn 4 or 5. But by then, I feel like the game is kind of like settled into the end game mode where, you know, you're moving and doing your last few things to try and secure a point or two, but you're not really fighting the opponent heavily for any objectives at that point.
Got it. So a circumstance I often find myself in is I'll be building my crew and I'll have the most of my crew already done. And maybe now I'm sitting at an amount of stones where if I add another model, I'm going to be at kind of an uncomfortable number in stones, right? So like, let's say I'm at like 9, you know, I have 9 remaining stones right now. Mm-hmm. I could just bring 9 to the game, and there are metas, like the Virginia meta, for instance, where very high soulstone caches are common. And I mean, I say that not living in Virginia, but I heard it on like a Third Floor Wars episode.
So I know it's true.
Well, hopefully I got the location right. If I got it wrong, sorry. But, you know, oftentimes I'm looking at like, okay, well, I could bring 9. I don't really want to bring that many. If I hire another model, it's going to bring me to, you know, 4 or 3 stones. Do you find yourselves in this situation? And what do you do? You know, how do you value the cash versus maybe another model's worth of activations? Like maybe some upgrades. What for you, what goes into your analysis at that point?
Yeah, I feel like this is pretty common. Yeah, I'll definitely go. You're in that situation where it's like, fuck, I know I'm not going to use 9 stones during the game. So generally at that point, I guess I'll either rework my crew a little bit or I will toss in some upgrades. I think generally, if you're not, again, if you don't have like a summoner or some really suit intensive keyword, I feel mm-hmm. like 9 is probably a bit too much. You'll probably be sitting on a lot of stones towards the end of the game and not really using them for anything.
Mm-hmm.
Or I guess like throwing them away because you don't really need them.
Do you commonly end games with stones?
If I'm playing summoners, I generally end with some stones in hand.
Oh, okay. That's interesting because you would expect summoners to be the most demanding for the stones.
Yeah, and I think part of that is when I'm playing summoners, I tend to like overcompensate quite a bit. Because
mm-hmm.
I figure like generally if I don't have any actions, you know, I'm bringing 5 stones and then... when I have a summoner, I have these stones. And then even when I'm playing, like once I start like getting down, even the, like a normal amount, like 4 or 5 stones, I'm thinking like maybe I won't read the situation correctly. So then I don't want to like burn for those extra cards, even though I normally would in those circumstances.
Right.
So that might just be more of a play mistake on my side than any kind of like grand strategy.
For me, I think it's, and this might be kind of predictable, but when I'm winning, in games where I've won, I'm more likely to have leftover stones than in games that I've lost, right? And that's not mm-hmm. necessarily any great revelation when you're losing. You know, when you're losing, you're up against it, and you're often trying other things, you know, trying more desperate things, or, you know, if you're getting blown off the table, you just have to spend stones to try to staunch the bleeding.
Mm-hmm.
How does being out of stones impact your play if at all? You know, does it impact your decisions? Does it impact the kind of actions that you take? You know, is there, do you not care at all? It's like not really a big deal. What do you think about in game when you're out of stone?
I feel like it affects how what's the right way to put this? I want to say that generally I'd play a little bit more bit conservatively. But I think it's like what you said. Generally, if I run out of stones and I'm in that moment where it's like, shit, I'm out of stones, what do I do? I'm usually in a already like stuck in and not in a great position. So, like, you know, ideally there are other things I would have wanted to do, but it's like too late at this point.
Mm-hmm.
In situations where I don't have stones, or I guess if I have low stones, I will be a little bit more careful about where I choose to engage.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I know I can't like shut off some excess damage. Or I guess in a lot of cases, offensively, if they have like manipulative or certain continents or stuff like that, and I don't have a reliable way to burn through it, that's definitely going to change the math. And I might choose just not to engage at all if I don't want to burn the stones or I don't have the stones in order to make that play.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say in the general sense, if I have no stones or low stones, I will play a lot more conservatively because I can't really account for variance as much. Sure. Practically, sure. I don't think it changes my play that much.
So I should say that I think, and you know, again, this is the whole it depends thing about how you just have to talk about everything in Malifaux. but there are models that are more impacted by the reliability that you lose when you are out of stones than others, right? So summoners who need a suit. You know, if you're relying on triggers, especially defensive triggers to survive and, you know, they're not built in or whatever. So, you know, I play some Colette of time to time and it definitely does change my assessment of what I think I can get away with if I can't guarantee her defensive trigger, either with a card in hand or with a stone. But yeah, even though I would like to say I plan for it frequently, it's just I have to try what I have to try, right?
Mm-hmm.
I guess to kind of close out this section, when you are, you know, building your crew, are you also explicitly thinking, oh, this is how many stones I need, or these are like the stones issues I'm going to need to compensate for or like keep in mind? Or is it just like you build the crew that you build and whatever you have left over, hey, that's your cash?
It's definitely something I'm thinking about when I'm building my crew. Mm-hmm. And I'll actively adjust or drop people just to make sure I have a high enough soulstone cash for when I go into the game. Mm-hmm. So it's like, even though I might really want that model, I really need this upgrade. If it brings me, you know, like below 5 stones, it becomes really difficult to make that choice.
Got it. Yeah, that makes sense. Oh, out of curiosity, have you ever used your last stone to draw cards?
I have, yeah.
Uh-huh. I feel like that I really don't like using my last stone. Like, I would need to have a really bad hand before I would do that.
Honestly, I think if I'm on my last stone, I'm much more likely to use it for a card draw, because I feel like at that point, having a higher card in my hand is going to be more useful to me than what I could have spent that one stone on.
Interesting. Okay. So that's, you know, how many you should bring. So now let's get to how you actually should be using them. And again, should, as in every time we say should or give recommendations on this channel, there are definitely in air quotes here. First section we have is defensively. And we have this bullet point: damage reduction works well with innate defenses. Can you kind of explain a little bit about, you know, why we wrote that and what it means?
Oh, yeah. So I guess what I was talking about earlier, I like having stones because if I go hyper aggressive, it can help me cover up for my mistake. Mm-hmm. So how slow stones work for when you use them defensively is they can prevent up to 1, 2, or 3 damage and reduce it to a minimum of 0, thus preventing all damage, which things like armor cannot, and a lot of other defensive things that aren't armor but like armor adjacent, like what the fire golem has.
Right.
Yeah, there's a lot of damage reduction things that can only reduce it down to a minimum of 1 damage. Mm-hmm. So if you have that kind of defense, and you also have model can also use soul stones, it can be a great way. It's a great deterrent for the opponent, because it becomes very likely that if they attack that model, they're not going to do any damage.
Right. That makes sense. What about, you know, the ability to reduce damage to a negative flip? Do you see that as interacting usefully with a damage reduction? I mean, you can also spend stones to reduce damage as well if you want to after stoning for a negative flip. But do you see a similar interaction in putting people, you know, like maybe they're at a straight flip and you can stone to bring them to a negative? Are you more likely to do that if the model has other mitigation abilities, or is that not really part of your calculus?
I think that generally depends more on the opponent's damage track than my innate defenses. So like if they have a higher swing, right? If they're like a 2, 4, 6 damage track, then I feel like I'm much more inclined to stone to put them on a negative. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, if they're on a straight and they can just cheat in for that 6 damage, like that 4 damage pump up. So I guess it's kind of like a difference between their damage track versus the damage prevention I can get out of the stone, right? If they have like a 2, 3, 4 damage track, I probably don't care that much about putting them on a negative flip.
Right. Got it. So obviously if you can reduce damage to 0, you know, that's great. And we would always rather take less damage than more. So anytime that you reduce damage, you know, you're achieving something. But is that, like, is it really that simple? Like, all, you know, that's basically the value here. I'm just taking less damage and that's it. Or is there kind of a, like a larger component to this damage reduction, you know, that kind of maybe can impact the flow of the game or something that maybe isn't apparent at first when you just say, oh, yeah, you can reduce damage and that's great?
Yeah, I think you notice this a lot more when you're on the offensive versus on defense. Mm-hmm. So like when, you know, their enemy master is at like 4 HP, right? And it's sure. Like, oh, I got like this 3, 4, 5 damage track. You swing in. It's like, oh, yes, I got 4. Perfect. Enough to kill them. And then they just flip and, you know, they negate 3 damage. And it's just like, okay, I did like nothing. It makes it offensively, it makes it really difficult to really know your kill thresholds for enemy models if they can use soul stones. Mm-hmm. I remember I was like playing the Victorias, right? And they have like 7 health.
Playing against the Victorias?
Against the Victorias, okay. Yeah, against the Victorias. They have, I think they have 7 health. If I played as them more, I'd hope I'd know their health
value. I think they have like eight. Let me look at the app, because I will never pass up an opportunity to make you wrong on the podcast. They're what, cost 11 or something like that. So they're way down here on 11. The stupid master. Yeah, they have eight.
Okay, suck it. But it's like, you know, you get in like one decent hit on them, right? And they're like at six health. I'm like, oh, I can, you know, I got my min three beater. He can go in. Like, this is going to be easy. Like, they don't have any innate defense. We're just going to knock them down. And then you swing in, you get your hit, everything's great. And, you know, you get your min damage hit, whatever. And then they prevent all of it. And now you've just like wasted your action entirely. You're sitting right in melee range of a Vic, which isn't a great place to be. And then suddenly, you know, the situation is very, very different. So it makes it a lot harder to know when you can get those kills. It frustrates like the math and the, I guess, the certainty of any actions. Mm-hmm. Whereas, yeah, like a six health Vic with no stones is just like a sitting duck for like most, you know, high damage models.
Right. And, you know, in some other episodes we've talked about in the past, kind of one of the things that we've noticed stronger players do is that when stronger players are taking the committal type actions, they are doing it with a very high likelihood of success. You know, they have worked out what the odds are like. They have the resources in hand to sort of justify the play. Mm-hmm. But Soulstones, because they are, you know, the amount they reduce is random, unless the attacker can guarantee a kill even with the highest reduction, what it does is it adds that element of uncertainty. And frequently, in my experience, you know, this is why enforcers are very frequently alpha strike targets. You know, enforcers are expensive minions, because you know, you go in with a good model, you kill like a 7 or 8 stone enforcer, or, you know, a solid support minion or something like that. And there's not that uncertainty, so that you've worked it out and you know that you can achieve it. And I mean, yeah, I think as the attacker, you know, you said, usually you'll notice it as the attacker. As the attacker, there is a huge difference between when your defender, you know, when your target has soulstones and when it doesn't. And so I think if you, and by you, I mean one, if one were to, you know, be looking at a range of options and maybe some are riskier than others, ask yourself, you know, can your target reduce damage? Do you have the damage capacity to cover any range? And if not, you know, are you willing to accept a circumstance where you fail, or is there maybe a different target for you to scalpel out? I was just playing a game against Jim, and Jim had brought an enforcer that was just wrecking all of my plans, and I mistakenly thought it was a henchman, which totally influenced, you know, how aggressively I was willing to dedicate resources to diving onto that model, because that model was so annoying to me that if I had not been incorrect, if I had just, you know, looked it up,
just flip over to that next page on your fucking app.
Yeah, exactly. Right, like the math on whether or not I could have taken him out would have become much more clear to me, and it, you know, maybe it still wouldn't have been worth it to me, maybe it would have, but by believing that he had this damage reduction capacity, it really complicated my decisions. All right, so you can prevent damage for you know, when someone attacks you. You can also prevent damage for conditions, and I find that is also something that maybe gets overlooked.
Yeah, I think, I'm not sure if I ever did this, but there can be some sneaky cases. I think in one of the old GGs, I can't remember the name of the strategy, but it's like we had to kill a certain number of points of worth of models each turn, right? You could either prevent the burning to keep your guy alive, or just have them die in the same turn to like deny points to your opponent.
Yeah, especially because, yeah, it's kind of a quirk of the way what conditions count as.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think for Reckoning, because for Public Enemies, if I recall correctly, I could be mistaken, but I recall that when a model dies, just the nearest enemy gains the bounty tokens. And so that was an attempt to make this, you know, if you die from conditions, it's not count as the enemy killing it.
Right.
But I think for Reckoning, if a condition killed you, it you know, the opponent didn't get anything, you know, didn't get credit for that.
Yeah, I think that. So it was like they're hitting your like 2 health guy with like burning 4 and you're like burning stone so he doesn't die. And then when the end of the round comes, you're like, all right, just die. It's like you're not worth it anymore.
Yeah, and it's also, you know, it's something to keep in mind as the attacker. If you've got a model that, you know, an enemy model that's at 1 life and it's got some burning on it and you're like, haha, you know, I'm not seeing that guy next turn. He's just like, all right, I stone and I live. A lot of ping damage type effects, which you frequently don't want to have to stone for these, but sometimes, you know, you believe as the attacker that you have a guaranteed kill because of ping damage. You know, stones are another way, right? So a model with 1 life that, say, is in an entropy aura, it can stone so that it doesn't die from entropy. You know, things like now there's several effects in the game where if you would heal, instead you take damage. Stones can be used in that way. And so it's not earth-shattering, right? This is all damage. Most people, I'm sure, are just like, why are you talking about this? I know it already. But, you know, if you haven't really thought about can stones prevent condition damage or something, you know, this, again, this is kind of another use for them that maybe isn't as readily apparent at first.
Yeah, yeah. It's definitely something to keep in mind.
All right. So what's another defensive use for these? I mean, we know that you can stone for a positive and that you can stone for a suit. But why, you know, why does that matter? What do you, you know, what sort of advice goes into those usages?
Like when to stone for a suit or?
Yeah. And yeah, exactly.
Like when, I mean, I guess when it'll save you from dying. I'm not sure if there's like some huge overarching. I feel like you're trying to get a certain response.
Well, I guess I'm trying to, like, why, you know, on defense, what do suits matter? Is, I guess, what I'm asking. Like, why would you stone for a suit on defense?
Oh, yeah, like, defensive triggers, like you mentioned earlier, like, Colette has her thing where she can just, like, disappear off the board and become eternally frustrating.
So the thing about that to keep in mind as the attacker is if the defender has a stone, and, you know, there's not another way to cancel their trigger or whatever, and they have one of those really impactful defensive triggers, you have to assume that that trigger is going to happen. That also has to factor into your math.
Yeah, for sure.
And, you know, I think it also, as you mentioned, when we were talking about how your play alters when you're out of stones, as the defender, if you don't have that reliability, it does change, you know, maybe what you're comfortable with trying. And then, you know, finally, countering, so you can spend a stone for a plus flip on defense, and that it seems pretty rare to me. Like I almost never do it, and I very rarely see people who are at a straight flip for defense spend a stone and be like, okay, well, I'm just gonna try to flip 2 cards for defense. Mm-hmm. I wonder if maybe there aren't more instances where it should be done, especially if the deck is getting pretty small, so you have a good idea of what the remaining ranges are. I still feel like that's a pretty rare use. But what you might see a little more frequently is if for some reason you're on a negative to defend, and that can happen, like the Poltergeist aura, I think Titania, like if she hits people in severe, or maybe it's the emissary or whatever, like, you know, there's some models that can put you at a minus for defense. And so spending a stone to get up to a plus there is pretty useful potentially.
Mm-hmm. You know, we kind of talked about earlier in like the cheating episode, but I think getting a plus up on defense isn't really used because you're already at a disadvantage and you're defending. Mm-hmm. So like, you know, paying a stone to flip another card to have to try and beat the opponent's value isn't great odds. And it seems like, you know, much more reliable to just kind of prevent the amount of damage coming in. And I feel like usually if your model is important enough that you would think about spending the stone to like give them a plus flip, it's probably better to, you know, just prevent damage.
Yeah.
Instead of, you know, still taking the hit and then now you don't have a stone to prevent damage.
Yeah, I guess I'm maybe a little surprised that there's not a model that gains something if they stone defensively, like stone for a plus flip defensively. I think that could be an interesting ability, potentially.
I think with like Soulstone Cash, can't you get like a triple plus flip?
Yeah, I think so.
Maybe it's on a minion?
Yeah, well, that ability is minion only, yes. But let's see.
Get them triple plus fluffs on your mole man.
They'll yeah, hey, you could do it. Well, because you're trying to hit that 4 and bury them. you know, in case they don't die with their 4 health. But But
so you just burn a soul stone for the triple plus up, burn a soul stone to put them on a negative for damage, and burn a soul stone for the damage. You'll be fine. Nothing's getting through that.
Yeah, hey, that sounds like a plan, and I heartily encourage you to try it next game. Bring two soul stone cash mole men. That sounds like it's gonna do work.
Double their point cost.
So an important thing, I think, to mention, though, about stoning for plus flip is, yeah, you're not going to see it a lot going from straight to plus, but it, going from negative to straight is important because you can't cheat if you're at a negative flip. So as a defending model, not only do you not want to be on a negative, but preserving the ability to cheat can be quite impactful.
Yep.
I mean, you can feel free to be like, nah, I don't really care if I can cheat or not. Heart of the cards, right?
I mean, honestly, even if I'm a negative flip, I think in most cases I'll just take it and work on damage prevention or possibly a negative on the damage flip.
Right. No, I mean, I can see that. It's going to depend a lot, I think, on the cards in your hand and the remaining cards and kind of like what can the enemy's action do, like what are some triggers and stuff like that, for sure. There are like a lot of actions where, I should say a lot. But there are some actions where if you fail this first thing, subsequent things get worse, right? So like if you get staggered like against Jackdaw, and then Jackdaw has a bunch of movement attacks. And so if you can avoid this first attack, you know, your life is going to, the rest of your turn is going to go a lot better than if you took it.
Oh, yeah. If you have like the card in hand to make sure you dodge that attack, sure. And I guess a lot of it is just because, again, like if I don't have like the high, if I can't like 100% know that this is going to work, then I'll generally go for like, you know, trying to, I guess, take a little bit less damage through damage prevention. But yeah, if you can counter that negative and then cheat in high enough to make sure you don't get hit.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, honestly, you know, like as I'm playing more and more, you don't necessarily need to ensure it. If you just get it high enough, you're probably good.
Right.
But
I mean, you know, cheating to close the gap so that you can get the hit at a neg, I mean, that's not uncommon. Doesn't feel great when you have to do it, especially if you have to cheat in like a moderate or something, because, you know, they flipped a severe, they're at like a 17 or 18, and you flipped a weak, you're at, you know, 6 or 7. And you're like, okay, well, whatever, I'll burn this 7 so that I go to a 12, and now it's at a negative flip. That doesn't feel like a great, often feel like you're getting great value necessarily for your card, but it, you know, something that you have to do so that they can't just hit you with a severe. Defensive triggers, you know, if you're expecting to cheat for a defensive trigger, you need to get up to that straight.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, that's definitely a point.
Right. Now, you know, for your mole men, since you're going to get so many plus flips, that's maybe less of a concern, but for other models, it could very well be an issue. Overall, because, as you mentioned, Colgan, you know, and we've talked about in the past, because the game is slanted so that the advantage is with the attack, like in various ways, right? The attackers win ties, attacking stats are frequently higher than defending stats, damage tracks are higher than healing tracks and stuff like that, right? For various reasons, attack is more efficient than defense. Does this mean that you don't want to use stones on the defense because you think you'll get more out of them for the attack? Or does this mean that actually you have to use stones on defense more frequently to kind of close that efficiency gap? How do you think stone use interacts with sort of the attack versus defense dynamic in the mechanics of the game?
I feel like the big thing is when you're using stones defensively, you're usually guaranteed a certain result. Whereas like offensively, you also need the card in hand to back that up.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and I guess this is why, for me, I frequently use stones more often on defense. I'm not necessarily thinking like, oh man, like I need to close that that math gap between defense being slightly less efficient. It's more that I know I'm burning this soul stone and I want to get value out of it. If I'm attacking offensively, you know, if I have like a stat 6 versus their like stat 5, if I don't have like a 12 or a 13 in hand to make sure that they can't like beat my flip, then all I'm thinking is I'm going to burn this stone and add the suit. And that's basically just signaling to my opponent, like, I need this to go off. And they're just going to drop that 13. I'm going to lose my stone. I'm going to lose my high card. And I'm just going to be so sad. Whereas like defensively, it's like, you know, if they hit, it's like, all right, I'm going to burn the stone. I'm going to reduce between 1 to 3 damage, or I'm going to put them on a negative flip. And I know that these effects are going to happen.
Yeah, as long as you don't get the Black Joker.
As long as I don't get the Black Joker.
So how frequently, or, you know, I guess how much does the pool, you know, the schemes and strat pool influence your you know, stone use? So like if assassinate is in the pool, are you more conservative with your stones? Because you're like, well, you know, I need these not just to keep my master alive, which is always useful, but here my master is potentially worth points. You know, is this something that you actively think about, or are you pretty much just playing the game the way you're playing the game, and, you know, it's not really maybe a conscious decision on your part?
I guess this is one of those cases where I feel like it should, but honestly, a lot of the times when I'm playing, I'm so caught up and focused on like what I need to be doing to get my plan in action and like in order and hitting all the beats I need to hit, that I don't always have room to think about what my opponent is necessarily going for until like it's like blindingly obvious. Like, I wonder why they're putting, you know, markers or ski markers like 10 inches away from each other. Interesting. Or yeah, if they're like in the back line like diving my master, then it's like, okay, I probably need to prevent some damage at this point.
That makes sense. I mean, I think for myself, I, you know, whatever plan I had at the beginning just goes out the window once I take my first point of damage and I go into panic mode. But yes, should this be something that you think about? You know, probably. If assassinate is in the pool, maybe you might want to bring a couple more stones than you might usually. Maybe you might want to not spend as aggressively, right? Maybe. That's Malifaux. All right. So I guess moving on to what we call offensively, but we've also, you know, in this section, we also have lumped in things like simple duels and summoning actions and whatever else. So it's not necessarily just offensively, but maybe positively might be a better way to think about it, right? Defensives, you spend negatively to like impede the efficiency of your opponent's actions. And this is to offensively to increase the efficiency of your own actions, whether or not they are direct opposed attacking duels or something else. So we already talked about how you can spend them to add suits. Why does that matter? And I realize this is like a question that might be kind of obvious or relate to things that we've already talked about, but can you kind of just elaborate on what this capacity to add stones does for you while you're playing Malifaux?
Yeah, you know, like, you know, we've been talking so much about like reliability and being able to get certain things off. There are triggers on certain actions that could be vital to maybe denying a point or scoring a point in a match. You know, something where you can, you know, like shove aside, where you can move their model like back 4 inches, maybe off a point. So there can definitely be times where that's very clutch. And being, if you have like a high card in hand to ensure a hit, and then you have the stone to ensure the suit, because the odds of you actually getting a high enough card with the right suit to perform the action you need to in an opposed duel is very, very low. But in the easier side of things, and probably like more relatable, is stuff like summoning actions, where you need, or any action with like a built-in suit requirement that they don't give you in the stat. So you can just, especially with your simple duels, you know, like I said earlier, making sure you have a card of the right suit and of a high enough value is very, very difficult. So being able to simplify that and just use a soul stone to make sure you get the suit. So all you need is like a 10 or better.
Right. I mean, you play Asami, and I've played a couple games with Asami as a second master. I don't think I've ever played a game just with Asami. But if you want to summon a Jorogumo, it takes a 13 of masks. And there is one 13 of mask and one red joker in the deck. And that is it, right? But because Asami can stone for that mask, the other three 13s are now options. And this, it's not mind-blowing, right? It's like, oh yeah, you can stone for a suit. But what might not be appreciated at first, especially among newer players who, or players new to a keyword or something, this is a major difference between henchmen and non-henchmen, or, you know, soulstone users and non-soulstone users, since there are a couple of models that aren't masters of henchmen that can use soulstones, and, you know, there's soulstone caches and upgrades. So, but for the most part, right? Like the difference between social users and non-social users in terms of suit reliability is huge. And if you're bringing a model in for their trigger and they can't stone, I'm not saying don't do that, because there's definitely models that are worth it to do that. But you just need to understand that your range of options are much more narrow if you cannot guarantee the suit through a soul stone.
Yeah, I mean, there's like the Pathfinders with their ability to like summon a clockwork trap, and it's like, oh, you only need like a six of tomes. Like, this is great. I'm going to have that every single fucking turn. But then, you know, you get like that, you have like an eight of rams and like a 13 of tomes. Like, fuck, I don't want to burn this out of trap.
Yeah, now I don't know what the math is on actually having a five of tomes or better. I imagine it's not bad, but I would expect the odds of not having it are large enough to where it's not a freakish occurrence.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, I feel like that just also highlights it, right? Having that stone lets you make your hands so much more efficient. Because mm-hmm. Being able to summon a clockwork trap is great, especially because it's not a really high TN. But once the card, the tome card in your hand is too high, that action becomes so much less favorable.
Yeah. Yeah, no, for sure. Another thing about stoning for suits, although this is defensively, I guess it could in theory matter offensively, or at least proactively, is that the Black Joker is a zero and no suits, but any suit that you stone for, you still have. So if you're defensively and you're trying to get a defensive trigger, the Black Joker can't prevent that. If you are trying a simple action that your stat alone can succeed at, I don't know if there's any action in the game that has a target number that your stat alone can do, unless, you know, there's some sort of additional bonus, like, McCabe 2's mm-hmm. bonus or something like that. But maybe it is possible. But it's just like a little niche circumstance that the Black Joker doesn't take away any suits that you've already stoned for. So, you know, sometimes that's going to matter. All right. So, you know, we kind of talked about just being able to guarantee and goes to efficiency. And really, this is Malifaux very much a game of efficiency. It disguises the fact that it's a math exercise with, you know, really cool models and a great setting, but it really is a math exercise. And the more you understand that, probably the more successful you're going to be, at least up to a certain point. Let's talk about spending for a plus flip as the attacker. Plus flips are always nice, but again, as someone who is going to evaluate when to do this, what does this capability do for you? When do you really, you know, reach for it?
Yeah, I feel like there are a lot more defensive abilities that put attacks against you on a negative flip than being able to put, I guess, a defensive ability on a negative flip. Mm-hmm. That makes sense. Yeah. So there's stuff like, you know, concealment, which is, you know, basically any model can get that from terrain depending on what board you're playing on. You have manipulative, serene continence, and things like that. And I guess that can divert a lot of attacks, but I remember when I first saw like serene continence when I was playing Nelly, I was like, oh, this is great. Like, they're never gonna fucking hit me. Like, I can cheat out. And then it's like, oh, I'm just going to spend a stone, put on a plus flip. And it's like, oh, fuck. Like, I take one hit and I'm dead. And it's like, you never feel quite so powerless. Like, there's so many times I remember when I was first starting out, I'd read this ability. I'm like, this is so fucking broken. I'm just going to be immortal. And it's like, no.
Yeah, I mean, I play the Crossroads 7, which is a crew that relies almost exclusively on manipulative and soulstone use as their defenses, right? And although I definitely do care about my manipulative, you know, retaining manipulative on the right models in the right circumstances as long as I can, mm-hmm. the fact is a single minus flip is not the greatest hurdle. And yeah, you can get over it with things like focus and other in-game effects, but also Soulstone users just always have this ability. And I'm assuming, of course, that it is kind of more complicated than this. Is it just like, oh, well, you know, I'm going to shoot Nelly. She has serene countenance. I'm going to stone to bring us up to a positive? Or is there kind of more that goes into your analysis as to whether, you know, when you want to do this?
I think it's generally the same idea I have behind cheating. Like, if I don't have like the card in hand to ensure that it goes off, I assume it's going to fail. Mm-hmm. So if I'm using a stone to get a plus flip against like a high value target that has like serene continence or manipulative or anything like that, I want to make sure that I'm able to ensure that hit. Because, you know, it's forcing a lot more onto it, right? Like, I don't want to burn a soul stone for nothing. Again, you know, why I also tend to use them more defensively than offensively, just because the result is more or less guaranteed, barring the black Joker.
Right. It's always really frustrating when you stone for a suit and you flip that suit. It's like...
Oh, yeah. it feels bad. It's like, God damn it.
So, you know, this is why if you watch Vassal games or, you know, if you see, you know, a game between someone who's got like a definite plan, and you might see a situation where they're trying to hit an opponent and they flip, like, say, a 10 total and their opponent flips an 11 total. So currently the action is failing. The attacking player could get ahead with, you know, a moderate or something, get up to like, you know, a 12 or a 13. Frequently when they've spent a stone or spent a focus, you'll see them cheat out a 13 just immediately and go to 19, you know, go to a value that's going to guarantee or, you know, virtually guarantee a hit. Cause in most of those cases, you know, like the red Joker can get the defender out. But I guess my point is frequently once a resource has been invested, you'll see a player cheat very high, even if it doesn't, you know, seem like they maybe need to. And that's because once they've invested the resource, they're really trying to guarantee they're going to achieve what they were trying to do when they spent that resource. And it also, so the flip side of that means if you're the defender and someone has spent a focus or a stone and you can guarantee a miss, like they cheated in the 13 and you have the red Joker and you're like, well, you know, do I want to use the red Joker here? If you need the red Joker for something else, you need it for something else. But these are frequently circumstances where it is worth it to spend a high resource of your own in order to like get rid of their focus or their stone and the high card that they just cheated.
Yeah. I remember I was playing in a game and I was like, okay, this is the same Victoria's game. I was like, I can kill the Vic. I have the damage. I can ignore Soulstone damage reduction. I can blow through all this stuff. I have the 13 in my hand. Like, they can't dodge this. And then they cheat out the red Joker. I'm just like, God damn it. It was so frustrating. And then I think the Vic ended up living for the rest of the game. And it was like, it was at the top of turn three. I was like, I can kill it. This is the one time Ohaguro Betari is going to be worth her points. And she fucking failed me again.
It's because you didn't have the mole man giving her the plus flips.
That's true.
You,
I didn't.
She could
have
got her own red Joker. To me, when someone spends a soul stone, and to a lesser degree of focus, but especially a soul stone, in an attack against one of my models, like, in my mind, I'm just like, oh, like, fuck, okay. You know, like, whatever they're trying, they have the means to guarantee it. And, you know, I've watched quite a few games on Vassal, and frequently for these alpha strikes, you know, again, you'll see, like, a model might have a really nice trigger, like maybe pouncing strike or shove aside, you know, something where they're going to be able to get an extra attack. And if they're stoning for that suit, they're going to get that extra attack, right? They're not just like stoning on a wing or a prayer. They've got the resources behind it. And I think, you know, we did mention this in another episode, but I do think that that really is a big difference between experienced players and maybe players who are a bit newer in Malifaux, or maybe who just aren't maybe as conscientious about all these things when they play, is what look like risky plays or quite committal plays from some of these really experienced players are actually, you know, they have worked out the circumstances, and barring something like the black Joker or the red Joker, they're going to achieve what they're trying to achieve, and it's going to be devastating. So if you're playing and your opponent is stoning for something, I would say it's probably going to happen.
Yeah. Now I'm thinking it's like, you might even be able to just mind game people with that.
You definitely high might. Cards. It is quite an investment though, right? Because even at best, you're like, okay, well, you did spend a stone, which is a pretty serious resource.
Yeah, yeah.
I realize we just entirely skipped over in the defensive section the main reason why you want a stone to put a damage slip on a negative. So I'll just go over it real fast. Basically, it goes back to this cheating, right? If a damage flip is at a straight flip or a positive, they can cheat in damage. This is why the accuracy track is skewed the way it is, to make negative flips on damage, the most common result. So if you are facing a straight flip on damage, that is a very, very good instance to stone to put the damage on a negative flip. Unless, you know, min damage will kill you anyways, or, you know, you have other uses for the stones or something. But just generally, that's a very frequent use for stones when damage is on a straight. And this will happen. This dynamic is quite common where a model might have focus. They spend the focus. They hit. They're in a negative flip. Focus brings up to a straight flip. Here you can spend a soul stone to bring that straight flip back to a negative flip. And you'll see this quite a bit in Malifaux games. And that was a bit of an aside, but I just didn't want to, you know, forget that section. And maybe through the magic of editing, you'll change the order, or maybe
That's too much work.
All right. So that kind of completely derailed offensive use, but we went through all the bullet points.
Yeah, we're pretty much wrapping up in there anyway.
Yeah, we are. So do you have any sort of concluding thoughts on Soulstones, or like how has your, if at all, how has your Soulstone use or your evaluation of Soulstones changed as you have played more Malifaux?
I mean, when I first started, I thought it was a trap. I was like, I'm not bringing Soulstones, I'm just gonna bring models. Like, what the fuck am I gonna use Soulstones for? I'll just flip good. And now, like, I feel uncomfortable bringing any less than like 5 stones into a game. So yeah, I feel like for newer players, I mean, it's also nice because you don't need to have as many models to, you know, get running in 50 stone games,
right?
So I would definitely recommend, just like, I don't think it's bad just to bring like 9 stones in a game and just like start spending them like candy and just get a feel for like how they can really change the flow of the game for you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think after that, you'll probably find like a number that kind of fits your playstyle and like your keyword as well. You know, like as we're saying, like the number of stones we bring into a game is going to depend heavily on, you know, what master we're bringing in, maybe our game plan, maybe assassinate once we get better at the game.
Yeah, you know, when I first started in third, you know, I came to third from second, where I was a Colette main, almost a Colette exclusive in second. Mm-hmm. And so when I came to third, you know, Colette was naturally the first master that I looked at. And when I saw that she had this built-in trigger to reduce damage by 2 and bury herself, I tended to bring kind of a lot of stones in the beginning, thinking, okay, well, I've got this damage reduction through the trigger. If I bring a bunch of stones, I can be risky with Colette. I can stone and keep her like on the table for a long time, and then eventually I'll stone out when I need to disappear, and she'll take a lot less damage. And I found, so a couple of things. First of all, I found that stones did not, because stones are, the amount of damage you're reducing is variable.
Mm.
It's not quite, you can't rely on it as your survival mechanism, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So what I mean by that is you can't go like, oh, well, I have 9 stones, I'm just going to throw my master into the middle, right? You still need a plan. So in that regard, I became more comfortable with using fewer soul stones and just playing kind of more carefully and a bit smarter. But also, as activation order has increasingly become sort of like dominant within the competitive meta, which I follow quite closely, even if, you know, I'm not really a part of, I've noticed that these players, they'll bring in enough stones to achieve their goals, and their hope is to get an advantage, and then for that advantage to build and build and build. It's kind of the rare game between like really high level players where it's just kind of like this grindy attritional thing where having a huge cash is going to make all the difference.
Mm.
But, you know, I'm sure those games do exist. What do you think? How I mentioned that I think it's the Virginia meta, but just like on a meta wide basis, how there do seem to be kind of different, I guess, comfort levels or like a sort of a different floors in terms of soulstones, right? So in Virginia, they prefer higher, so their low mounts might be like 6 or 7, and mm-hmm. then you might have metas where, you know, a low amount or is, you know, 1 or 2, right? And they might generally be 3 or 4. We are kind of in a meta where we recommend to people 5, and, you know, it's not unusual to see, like, you know, from 4 to 6. Do you think, like, the meta, like, how do you think the meta actually can influence how many soulstones someone decides to bring?
I mean, if you go into a meta, then I think it's pretty common that you'll emulate the stronger players, right?
Uh-huh.
So if they do this, then, like, oh, if I want to get better, I should do this, because this is what the strong players are doing. So, I mean, I'd imagine, you know, that's how a lot of metas develop. And I guess even when we say meta, like, I mean, our meta is what, like, maybe like 6 to 10 people. Right? So it's like, yes, we have conclusively decided that this is the way to play the game within our circle of 6 people. And we've come to this through rigorous play testing of like maybe 3 to 4 games a week.
So I guess the last point I want to ask you about is, you know, what do you think about Soulstones as a mechanic? Do you think they're good for the game? Do you like the way that the Soulstones interact with the rest of the game? Do you not like it? Would you make changes, or, you know, do you not really care? What do you think about Soulstones as a mechanic?
I really like it. I mean, like, it interacts well with the theme of the game, with the cards and everything. There's a lot of uses to it. And I think, like you said, that they feel very impactful, but it's not like you're just burning through stones in order to get anything done. Mm-hmm. But it's really nice, I think, because in a lot of other games, you're always trying to hit exactly the point limit. You know, like 2,000 points of Warhammer. If you're like 7 points under, you're like, fuck, I'm just behind. Whereas in like Malifaux, it's kind of like you don't actually want to hit that limit. You want some flexibility so that you're not really punished for not having like the perfect combination of little numbers adding up to that big number.
I like how it kind of provides that sort of escape valve while you're building a crew, so that you don't have to stress out about finding that perfect combination. Mm-hmm. For me, I like Soulstones quite a bit, and for two like diametrically opposed reasons. I like the reliability that they add, you know, that Stoning for Suits adds, or that Stoning for Plus Flips adds. And I think this is, again, one of these situations where skill tells, where the stronger players, they do a good job of working out what they need to do for a turn, what they can do, you know, given the resources and you know, what the enemy can do in response. And you really can just see, oh, he's stoning, this is going to be brutal. And that's very different from someone who is like, well, I've got a good model, I'm gonna try to kill something, right? And I'm not saying it's wrong to play that way. You know, people should play however they want, but it's almost elegant the way some players are able to kind of forecast what's going to happen and really like sort of maximize their resources. So the reliability and the fact that it is skill based, that players have to know which actions are worth it. They have to know actually when they in fact have that degree of reliability and all those things, like those are all skills. I like that. At the same time, I actually do not like if everything is necessarily 100% certain that way, right? As like damage reduction, the fact that when you're doing this math, you have to be like, oh, okay, he can reduce damage with Soulstones. It's a range. Neither of us can know what the range is going to be ahead of time. How is this going to impact my math? Like, is this something I can still achieve no matter what? I just have to spend more resources. Is this something where now it's risky and I have to, you know, think about, is the risk worth it? Is the risk, you know, if I fail, am I, you know, is it going to cost me the game? Blah, 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 blah. You know, I think the way Soulstones both add reliability and add uncertainty is really well done, and not always, you know, that's not always the first thing that comes to mind when you're talking about Soulstones. You don't necessarily go, oh wow, it has all these interactions with the way people play the game. But I think that Soulstones actually are quite a positive thing in the game. And now I'd be interested to know, because I know some players do not like Jokers because they want the certainty there, and the variance between Jokers is not, or, you know, when Jokers come up, is just not something they enjoy. Mm-hmm. I wonder if those players would have the same reaction to Soulstone damage reduction, or if that's a kind of variance that, for whatever reason, they're willing to accommodate.
Yeah, I'd be interested what the split is. I mean, I would tend to think that they wouldn't like it as much either. But I mean, I think, you know, playing a lot of games, or just anecdotally, I know that I need a certain amount of variance in my games for them to be enjoyable. But if that gets turned up too high, then it definitely ruins my enjoyment of a game.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that's fair. And we've probably all been in games where the black Joker or the red Joker, you know, where Jokers have totally wrecked us. And we probably have all been in games, whether you want to admit it or not, where the Jokers may have saved us or made things a lot easier. And the expectation is that, like any statistical process, over the long run, it's going to be a wash, but it definitely doesn't feel like a wash when it's happening to you. I guess I find Jokers really amusing, which is appropriate. You know, with that, I think we probably have talked out Soulstones. Again, this episode is primarily for beginners. If you are an advanced player and you think we're totally wrong, or if you are a newer player and you're like, geez, that was brilliant. If that dynamic is reversed, that's also fine. But just basically, no matter what you think, if you want to let us know how we're doing, we love to hear from you. Yeah, email, Facebook, Discord. You know, we got voicemails from Anchor. We haven't got one in a long time, but when we first started our podcast, we actually got several voicemails over Anchor, which was pretty cool because I didn't even really know that was a thing. We have a PayPal and a Patreon if you want to support the channel in that way. That would be appreciated because Kogan is still trying to buy up those 20 mole men.
Oh, yeah.
Well, actually, if you give us Soulstone cash.
Yeah, I only need two now.
If you give us Soulstone cash, well, because we were like, you know, could 20 mole men actually win a game? But if you give them all Soulstone cash, you don't get 20. You get, like, I don't know, 12 or something.
Do I get, like, the stones for them? Or do I have to, like, count for that separately?
Yeah, you would have to, like, bring fewer mole men for stones. Because I'm not facing triple plus flips for free. anyways, if you would like to support the channel in any way, we'd appreciate it. You know, just by listening, you know, that's really fantastic. We just appreciate everyone out there. You know, we just play in Los Angeles, but we like Malifaux. We want to be part of talking about the game. And sometimes when, you know, we see a stray reference to us, like I saw on Facebook, someone had made a board, a Malifaux demo board, and they put posters up at the various pods, not just ours, but posters of various pods up on their boards, and that was really cool to see. So, you know, we do this to talk about the game, we want to be part of the community, and we really enjoy just any feedback. With that, I'm just gonna say good night. Thanks for listening.
Night, everyone.